Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Let's kick things off with good news for job seekers.
Robert Half conducted a survey, and what we found from employers is hiring optimism is high. We are rebounding in the first half of 2026. 60% plan to add permanent staff just in the first two quarters of 2026. Now, with that, 55% expect to increase contract hiring to support immediate needs. And we're definitely seeing that from the overflow of lack of hiring in the 2025 market.
And it looks like companies are kind of shorthanded.
Yes, employers are showing business risk. You know, 83% of hiring managers say they are confident in their business outlook for 2026, which is such a high growth from last year, reported at 43% confident of their business outlook of 2025. So we're seeing that there are some challenges in the hiring process still, but the overlook of 2026 is going to be widening skill gaps to keep and retain our employees. So while we're still seeing the labor market a tad shaky, entering an exciting season where we should see an uptick, we still are seeing some lags in employers helping widen those skill gaps to plug those holes.
And I guess only 6% of companies have the talent they need to complete priority projects. How does that happen?
You know, with only 6%, which is kind of an astounding number, say that they have the talent they need for major projects this year, meaning that many of these companies are hiring. Now, what happens when we don't hire for key positions? And I can speak specifically to accounting and finance in the Metro Detroit area. A lot of project-based work comes out of automotive, manufacturing, which is our huge Metro Detroit climate. Those types of projects go on hold. If they're not meeting or needing a bottom line met with these projects, you're going to see them still sit with current staff. And it weighs down your current staff when they have extra workload, when you're not plugging these project holes. But the great news for 2026 is we're going to see a lot more contract positions available, because now that we have the budget and the optimism of the market, we're going to be plugging those holes. So you're going to see that 94% of the businesses out there that Robert Half surveyed are going to be bringing in contract workers to finish those lagged projects of 2025.
And how does AI factor into all of this right now?
That AI is going to be, I believe, the key word in labor for the 2026 market. Now, AI is helping solve workforce challenges, but can AI solve all of the workforce challenges with the holes we saw in 2025? So, Robert Half also added some AI questions to our survey, and what we found is 65% of managers say finding skilled talent has become harder until they use AI software. 58% said AI-generated applications make it more difficult to truly identify those qualified candidates. And AI tools actually allow job seekers to produce overly polished resumes. So AI can be such a strong tool in looking for a job, but we're kind of catching on the employer side that we see even folks or candidates asking maybe a ChatGPT or like software interview questions live in an interview if it's virtual. So my best advice is AI is a great tool to helping find qualified candidates on the business side and help maybe tool a resume on the candidate side. But in the end, we kind of have to step away from the AI platform to have those really in-depth interview conversations human to human.
For people who might be looking for a job, where are the jobs right now?
We are seeing a lot of openings in the finance and accounting sector. So out of a Robert Half survey, we saw the highest numbers coming out of finance and accounting at 6%. And then administrative and customer support combined, leading that at 12%. As speaking far as industry, healthcare, human resources, and technology, right now are the top three in-demand skills for job seekers.
And why are employers more optimistic right now?
Business confidence is improving as economic conditions stabilize. And you'll see that as a really secular, common thought in the labor market. Many organizations that paused their hiring in 2025 are restarting, again, those strategic projects that were just put on hold. Now, that momentum is fueling demand for talent, especially for those hard-to-hire skill areas. Going back to marketing and creative work or accounting and finance, where it's very field focused.
And what recommendations do you have for somebody who might be looking for a job?
There is still such a high demand and great opportunity for professionals with those specialized and in-demand skills, both technical, and we don't want to forget that interpersonal skill set. So job seekers who can combine soft skills like communication, adaptability, and also technically know how these businesses are ran and are able to verbalize that in an interview, that is going to be the game changer in delivering in the interview and getting these high demand jobs. With the age of AI coming in, we find that the interview seats now are very technical driven, right? Our business owners, specific to the Metro Detroit area, they also want those soft skills. Are you adaptable? Can you pivot? Can you fit well in my team? Do not forget those examples when you're interviewing with a company. They, of course, want to know how technically inclined you are for the role. But don't forget, that can be teachable. Still bringing those human sides and elements and soft skills to the table during the interview process will 100% give you an edge on candidates who do not.
We've been talking with Shannon Edlinger of Robert Half. I'm Beth Fisher, WWJ News Radio 950.
And whether or not you're able to land a job, health insurance and the price of prescriptions are top of mind for many. Here's what you need to know about the new Trump RX on Tommy Tucker.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
So let's see what our friend Rena Conti has to say. She's an associate professor, an associate professor in the Questrom School of Business at Boston University. Good morning, Rena.
Good morning.
Tell me your thoughts on Trump RX. For people that don't know, I guess we should go back and talk about what is Trump RX.
Sure. Trump RX is a website that advertises the prices of selected group of drugs and provides access to coupons for patients to purchase those drugs largely through retail pharmacies.
So while it's got his name on it, it's just a website basically that kind of like is a clearinghouse or something? Explain that to me.
Yes, that's right. It has his name on it, but it essentially is linking patients to a coupon that people then use at a pharmacy site. And that coupon is generally offered either through another website, like the drug company's website itself, or you get directed to a good RX or some other website. So people can think of this as being like Expedia. It's listing a whole bunch of options, but people have to go out and shop for those options.
But you still need, this is like after you would get a prescription from your doctor, right?
Correct.
So, for example, I'm looking at Trump RX. I'm looking at ZepBound up to 72% off. And then you go from there with the different milligrams and so forth, strength and how much you need and all that stuff. But this is not anything that would not be available if you did your own research anyway. Is that accurate or not?
Yeah, great question. And there's been a lot of controversy over this. What I would say is that there are a handful of drugs that are listed on this website that appear to be a good deal. In other words, when you look, you can't find that advertised price through other vendors or through other means. But the vast majority of drugs on this list can be available for purchase at lower prices at people's local pharmacies or through online pharmacies, including Mark Cuban's Cost Plus Drugs, and even through GoodRx.
Wait, so this could lead you to the higher, to pay higher prices? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that's right. There are some of these drugs for which, actually, the majority of drugs that are on this list are available in generic form. And those prices are much lower than the brands that are being brand prices that are being advertised here in this website. But there are a handful of drugs on this website. ZepBound by Lilly, which is a weight loss drug. There are some drugs that people use for fertility treatment, for which the Trump RX price appears to be a really good price, if not the best price available for that drug in the U.S. market.
So somebody texted in, how dare you let Trump get credit for anything good? Again, you know, they got the 38% that no matter what you say, it's going to be perceived wrong. Or what. We're not saying anything's the president did anything good or anything bad. We're trying to determine that right now and trying to parse the details. And so many times we want to simplify things. When it comes to this or that, put a white hat on this or a black hat on that. This is good. This is bad. But there are a lot of nuances, especially when it comes to prescription drug prices, correct?
That's right. Listen, buying prescription drugs in the U.S. is very complicated. And this program provides for a handful of people access to lower cost drugs. It is not a silver bullet. It is not really reducing the complexity that people face getting a prescription, getting a diagnosis, and ultimately affording their drugs. But for a few select people, it is offering a good deal.
And who would those people be?
Yes. So good question. So people who get a prescription for the Lilly drug ZepBound, which is helpful for weight loss, this price that is being offered is actually being offered by the manufacturer itself, by Lilly. And the price that is being offered here, which is around, I think, $200, is really the very best price that one could buy this product at on the U.S. market. There's also a handful of fertility drugs that are used for people who are undergoing in vitro fertilization. There's a product specifically called Gonal F. That product is very expensive. It's approximately $1,000 to buy cash. Many people don't have insurance to cover their in vitro fertilization treatments. And so the price that is being offered in the Trump RX website is a very good deal. It's on the order of around $200 to get access to this important drug.
So when it comes to ZepBound, when it comes to this Gonal F, it would seem to me, whomever it is that's selling it now, unless they were grossly marking it up, and that, you know, is a subjective term, it's market-based, all that stuff. I don't have to go into that with you, Rena, but I guess the point I'm making is if the people that are selling ZepBound or this Gonal F at a higher price now, because they couldn't get it cheaper, they can go to Trump RX, get it, and then sell it. Do you see what I'm saying or not?
I do. There are rules against reselling drugs in the U.S. The feds will come find you and shut you down. So I would say instead for people, again, who don't have insurance and are looking to purchase these two products, getting access to this drug through this website is a good deal.
Does this have any impact on independent pharmacies? I'm getting a text that comes in here.
Independent pharmacies and other pharmacies should see an influx of people downloading this prescription, downloading this coupon and coming to ask to redeem it. What I think pharmacists need to know is that people are going to have a lot of questions about whether this is a good deal or not. And so really the pharmacist is really going to be acting as a as an educator to the public about whether or not using the coupon to buy the brand drug as opposed to the generic is actually a good deal for people.
So somebody says, I work in a local pharmacy and it is basically a good RX ripoff and is a coupon program. You still need to bring your coupon to a pharmacy to have the prescription filled. The primary drugs are for diabetes and weight loss. The big issue is how pharmacies will be reimbursed by Trump RX. Is that a valid concern?
Yes, that is a valid concern. When people normally use coupons, the pharmacy is made whole for the acquisition cost of that drug. In this circumstance, we don't actually know whether the pharmacy is going to be made whole for the difference between the advertised or the acquired price of the drug that the pharmacy uses to stock the product and the price that people are going to get through Trump RX.
Wait, so if I go to Trump RX, I'm buying drugs from them or I'm just getting the coupons from them to take to my local drugstore? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, you're getting a coupon that you're taking to your local drugstore for the majority of these products, but not all of them. When you're getting a coupon, you go to a retail pharmacy, and the pharmacy presumably will honor that coupon. Typically, when people present coupons, the pharmacy isn't out the cost of the coupon because on the back end, the drug company will make the pharmacy whole or the insurer will make the pharmacy whole for the acquisition cost. But exactly how that's going to work here, we don't quite know.
So a coupon is based on, to go back to whether it's cereal or prescriptions or what have you, based on the full faith and credit of the issuer, right? I mean, that's what the grocer or the pharmacy is depending on, that, okay, I give you 20% off the box of Flaky Wakies, but in exchange for that, the cereal company or somebody is guaranteeing that I'm going to get that 20% back. I, the grocer, I, the pharmacist, am not giving you the discount.
That's right. Exactly. And here again, we anticipate that the brand companies that are participating in Trump RX will make the pharmacy whole, but those details have not been disclosed.
Do you think it was launched a little bit prematurely or not?
What I would say is I am surprised by the number of drugs being offered on this website and the number of companies that are participating. We anticipated that somewhere between 15 and 17 drug companies would be listing their products on Trump RX and that thousands of drugs would be offered. But instead, we have 5 drug manufacturers offering a very select number of brand drugs that they sell into the U.S. There are actually only 43 drugs listed on this website. And just to give a sense of the few number of drugs that are being offered, there are approximately 5,000 drugs sold in the United States. People can go and shop at Mark Cuban Cost Plus Drugs, and there are more than 2,000 drugs being offered by him and his catalog. 43 drugs at coupon prices. It's something, but it's not huge. It's not a huge offer.
And make no mistake about it. The drug business is a big, giant business in the United States and the world, is it not, Rena?
That's right. That's right.
So along those lines, why can Trump RX aside, and we'll get to the Cuban part of it in a minute, Mark Cuban, not the country Cuba, but why can... Well, because it can get confusing, right? But why can I go and get X medicine in Detroit and pay this, or go get X medicine in Toronto and pay a vastly different sum?
Other countries negotiate centrally for the purchase of drugs, and using that central negotiating power, they get lower drug prices, on average about 40% lower than the U.S. does.
So why can't President Trump, with an executive order, instead of a Trump RX, for example, which, again, good intention, my daddy used to say, and again, people can use this phrase however they like to fit whatever situation they want, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But why can't President Trump, or could he, given, I don't know what the legal part of it is, issue an executive order saying from here on, the United States will negotiate lower prices with drug companies? Is it that simple or not?
Well, in fact, the Biden administration passed that law, and now there have been 45 drugs or so that have been negotiated on behalf of Medicare beneficiaries by the federal government. Those prices are 60% lower than they were before, and seniors are getting a better deal than they used to. The Trump administration has continued that policy and, in fact, is aiming to expand it.
Tell me about Mark Cuban's platform. What is that?
Sure. So Mark Cuban makes generic drugs.
He makes
and
them?
That's right. He makes them.
Manufactures.
He manufactures them, and he sells them at a fixed markup. Many of those drugs are available on his website at lower prices than other generic manufacturers are selling at Costco or Walgreens or your local CVS.
So is he doing this out of altruistic purposes, or is he making money off of this? Because, you know, Mark Cuban could be a guy that can be concerned with the public good, but he's also a shrewd businessman.
He is a shrewd businessman, and there is plenty of money to be had selling at a fixed markup generic drugs in the U.S., and he's figured out how to do that.
So from the business free market standpoint, he's found a way to make a profit and yet still have the drugs become even more affordable for people? Is that an accurate statement or not?
Yes, that's right. And what his business is really anchored on is the concept that generic and biosimilar competition can get prices really low, and yet manufacturers still can still cover their costs and make a profit when they sell them into the U.S. market.
So why can't other people do what Mark Cuban is doing, or does he have some kind of pricing markup strategy that's proprietary?
Not really. There are plenty of manufacturers that have that are operating in the Cuban space. He's very good at marketing, so we know his name. We see him on Twitter and on TV. But there are plenty of low-cost generic manufacturers who are offering drugs at low prices to the American public.
So why is it so hard for us to get the best price on a medication?
Really, the drugs that we have trouble affording are the drugs that aren't the ones that have generic or biosimilar competition. Those prices are pretty low and could even be lower. But it's really those brand drugs, the new drugs that don't face any competition for which the U.S. is still paying the highest prices in the world.
Okay, so somebody texted in and said, in the U.S., research and development of a medication which takes years to develop is passed on to the consumer, and I fully realize the R&D and so forth, but why does the United States subsidize that and not other countries?
Great question. We have done so for our own national interest. We have decided that we will pay highest prices for these type of products to assure that American companies manufacturing branded drugs have a high-priced market to sell them in when they actually come to market. So you can think of it as we're basically subsidizing, or we're pulling R&D into these types of products by assuring innovators that we'll pay the highest prices when they are successful. Why do we do that? Well, we care about our health, but also we care about our economy. And biopharmaceutical markets in the U.S., this industry is a multi-trillion dollar industry. It employs a lot of people, and those jobs are good paying technical jobs. And so we do it selfishly for our own reasons.
Is the United States leading the way for the world when it comes to that? And does the world have a lot of medications that they would not have had the United States not, in essence, subsidized this or been willing to pay? You know, I say subsidy, Rena, but it's a de facto subsidy, is it not, by being willing to pay the higher price?
Yes, we are subsidizing the biopharmaceutical industry both in the United States and elsewhere by being willing to pay the highest prices in the world. Again, we do that for our own reasons, to improve our health and also to improve our wealth. Right now, the U.S. market is approximately 40 to 50% of total pharmaceutical sales in the world. The U.S. population has access to drugs that people in other countries, including in Europe, do not have access to.
So when a consumer is looking for the best possible price, you would advise them to do what? Because also part of that pricing structure is, like, you pay more at a convenience store for something than you would at a grocery store because of convenience, right? Because of the access, et cetera. So you got to think about, how do you get the medication? How's it going to get to you when you factor in how much you're willing to pay for it, or what pharmacy you're going to do business with?
That's right. What people should know is that purchasing prescription drugs is complicated, obviously. And it is still the best deal is still the deal where you use your insurance to pay for a prescription drug you need. For the small number of people who don't have very good insurance or who are forced to pay out of pocket for the drugs they need, it pays to shop around and see whether you can get a better deal at Costco, at Walgreens, or using one of these couponing programs.
Thank you, Rena. Very complicated. We'll have you on again. We appreciate your time as always.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Berry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.